turn to
John's Gospel in chapter number 5. Again, John's Gospel, chapter number 5. Appreciate all of the songs, the hymns that set our hearts to worship. Those that he's given the talents to do so. Of late, I've thought about, as I've crossed the country, I've been encouraged to see how many young people have been. This past week, I'm going to say a third of the church was teenagers during revival meeting, and man, I mean, they were in on it. And I've seen that quite a bit of late, and I was thinking about the girls as they sang. Isn't it wonderful when God can get a hold of a young heart with that fresh talent that hadn't been worn out by the devil and use it for His glory?
Amen.
And thank God for that. And also, so many times when somebody's doing the will of God, we spend so much time praying for those that are out of the will of God. And I'm not against that. And we should pray for sinners and all alike. But what we'll do is we'll wait for somebody to get out of the will of God, and then we'll go to request and prayer. And so I would say we need to pray for these young people while they're doing God's will, so that we don't have to talk about when they're out of God's will. Pray for them while they're doing the work of the Lord, and let them know we appreciate it. What a blessing! All right, John's Gospel, chapter number 5, and we'll begin reading in verse 1. We're interested in this miracle of grace. Of course, Jesus is the fullness of grace. And we notice that he comes here to Bethesda, which means, of course, kindness, mercy, grace. Having those five porches, a type of grace, he speaks to him in five words. In verse number 6, wilt thou be made whole? But every miracle that Jesus does is a miracle that is undeserved in our lives. And this morning we emphasize the destitution or the absence from grace. Sometimes it's hard to see any grace in the situations that we are a part of. We look upon the horizontal. But I like what the Hebrew writer said, looking unto Jesus is where we're going to get our help. Grace is difficult to find in many areas. When we first look at Adam's fall, or Noah's flood, or Ruth's funerals, or the prodigal son's fleeing, or Job's friends, or even David's fornication. It just seems like there ain't no grace there. And we'll not find a lot of grace until Jesus gets in the midst of it. And then it seems like the grace valve has been turned on, and it begins to flow even in those impossible situations. And thank God for grace where there's a destitution or a lacking of it. But I want us to move a step further, and tonight I want to look at what I would call the delusions of grace or the deceptions of grace. So many times when there is an absence of something, we become so alarmed that we are prone to grasp at straws, or to be satisfied with something less than what we really need, because we're wanting some help. And of course, the world over is making money off of our frailties and infirmities. But none of the things that they sell us are a perfect cure. Matter of fact, they sometimes are not even a cure. But we're willing to try it because we're hurting, so we're gonna pay whatever the price is. And then we find out later that what we paid for not only didn't fully cure the problem. It started another problem. And so we're in a tizzy about this. And I'm going to look into this text, and I want us to see how that there are certain things that looked hopeful if you were to connect to them, but really all they would be is a delusion, they would be a deception, they would be a hindrance to the fullness of grace that comes in Christ. And there are a lot of good things in this world, a lot of good intentions. But boy, if you look to them to be the answer, then you're going to fall far short of what the fullness of what Christ has for you. I was thinking about this matter of diseases and things like that. We all have physical infirmities. And it seems like once you discover you have something, you never realize so many other people had it. And then everybody begins to giving you advice on what to do about what you got. And they are well-meaning. I have this thing, and y'all know well, but now called psoriasis. And it's not cirrhosis now. I'm not got a drinking problem. It's psoriasis. It's a skin problem. Picked up when I was 45 years old, and I've just been amused. And I have, honestly, I have tried about everything most folks have said. You know, drink a little of this or take this or, you know, do this or whatever. And if it's legal and not harmful too much, I'll try it. I mean, you know, bathe in salt from the Dead Sea or whatever. But I have found that it's all just a big sales pitch, that nothing, some things help, most of the time they don't do much for you. I had a telephone call one time, a fellow told me, he said, "Hey, preacher," said, "I just watched it on TV, I just wanted to let you know that I they were talking about how that in India, if you have psoriasis, they fly you over there and they have these fish that eat the dead skin off from you." And I said, "Brother, those are piranha. I'm not going over there." Forget that. Then I had one well-meaning, kind lady came up to me. She said, "Preacher, you know," said, "I had psoriasis all the way up until I had my first baby," and said, "it went away." I said, "Well, I mean, I got no hope there." I said, "My wife's had four. It didn't help me none." But it is sort of humorous in a way as to how people have certain things that they want to share with you, that, and then other people are intended on taking your money. They want to sell you something. But I want us to notice in here just a few moments tonight these delusions or these deceptions of grace, and how that we don't want to accept them at the expense or at the sacrifice of experiencing true grace that is found only in Christ. Now, let's look at that first verse. "After this, there was a feast of the Jews. Jesus went up to Jerusalem. And there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool, which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having five porches. In these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, of blind, halt, withered, waiting for the moving of the water. And an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first, after the troubling of the water, stepped in, was made whole whatsoever disease he had. And a certain man was there which had an infirmity 38 years. And when Jesus saw him lie and knew he had been now a long time in that case, he saith unto him, Wilt thou be made whole? The impotent man answered him, Sir, I have no man, when the water is troubled, to put me into the pool. But when I am coming, another steppeth down before me. And Jesus saith unto him, Rise, take up thy bed, and walk. And immediately the man was made whole, and took up his bed, and walked. And on the same day was the Sabbath. The Jews therefore said unto him that was cured, It is the Sabbath day. It is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. And he answered them, He that made me whole, the same said unto me, Take up thy bed and walk. Then asked they him, What man is that which said unto thee, Take up thy bed and walk? And he that was healed wist not who it was, or Jesus, had conveyed himself away, a multitude being in that place. Afterward, Jesus findeth him in the temple and saith unto him, Behold, thou art made whole, sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee. The man departed and told the Jews that it was Jesus which had made him whole. Therefore did the Jews persecute Jesus and sought to slay him, because he had done these things on the Sabbath. Now let's look down through this text for a few moments and look at some real hindrances, really. They don't seem to be so on the surface, but as you begin to consider the difference between each one of these things that might be a little help to this man and Christ, who could make him fully whole, then there is a great difference. And there are things in this world that can seem to help along the way, no matter what the vice, no matter what the disease, no matter what the sin is, there are things that can help along the way. But when you consider those things in Christ, there's a world of difference. And so let's look at it. First of all, I want to point out to you verse number 1. After this, there was a feast. Now that word feast also is the word festivities. It has to do with those scriptural remembrances, commemorations of things God had done for Israel in the past, such as the Passover. And then there were some historical things, such as in the book of Esther, the feast of Purim, of which they were delivered, of course, from being slain by Haman. And so there were several of those feasts, the Feast of Pentecost, the Feast of Tabernacles, the Feast of Passover. We don't know which one this was. But it was a time of which the children of Israel could look back and rejoice and commemorate the deliverances that had come by God in a divine way and in a historical sense. They came from many parts of the country, especially the world, if it was the Passover. And on these festivities, you were commanded to come. If you were anywhere, even on the other ones, within 15 miles of a radius. And so there were hosts of people who came to Jerusalem, and they came for a feast. I kind of compare it to revival time. When we come, of course, to revival at different churches, everyone wonders why I have problem with weight going up and down, up and down. Well, the up times is when I go and they can cook, like here. Down times, sometimes I go up north and they can't cook, so I lose a little weight. But that's not being taped, is it? But of course, when we get together, it's a festivity time. It's a time of rejoicing, a time of singing, a time of praise, and it's a time of fellowship, a time of enjoying each other's presence, and a time of eating. All of those things, there are festivities that are going on. But I'd like to take that and just apply it in more of a scope as far as humanity is concerned. And I want to emphasize that these feasts were doing nothing for these people that were in these porches that had all these diseases. Now, they could hear all that was going on, but they could not become a part of it. And what was going on, though in their ears it may be a pleasurable sound, it was not going to deliver them. So here is my thought, hope it's not stretched, but I would say to you that festivities, feasts, pleasures, whatever level that they are on, are far less of a real healer for the inner man than what Christ has planned himself to be for our lives. And isn't it true that for the most part, this world in all of its misery is looking for pleasure, looking for entertainment, looking for something that will elevate the spirits, They want to be somehow lifted out of their situation, even if it's for a short period of time, even if it's a feast or festivity of time, even if it won't last. Now, I'm not against entertainment that is proper. I'm not against sports, ball game, or something like that. I'm not against laughter and things of that nature as long as it's clean. But what I'm saying is if that's all you've got to deal with life, you don't have much. And the truth of the matter is that's all the world seems to have. They have to have somebody make some kind of a joke or have some kind of an entertainment, because if they're not being entertained, they have no life of their own. And but it's really not helping the problem. The festivities are fine, but don't look for them to deal with the real issues in life. I remember speaking to my dad, as I said, was an alcoholic, and then he had been through a lot and had killed a man, and of course his wife left him and all those youngins and whatever. And I was raised up in that, in that atmosphere of liquor and things of that nature. It was common thing in the house. There was nothing wrong. Anybody could drink it that wanted it. And I can remember on two occasions as a young child, I got inebriated, if you want to call it, or I got drunk, and just 10, 11 years old. On both occasions, I was so sick. I mean sick. And I remember waking up on one of those occasions on my neighbor's doorstep, regurgitating, throwing up. And I said to myself as a 10 or 11-year-old, I don't know what everybody else is getting out of this, but somehow it ain't giving me the same effect. And so as a kid, even before being saved, I had already made up my mind that I didn't care for that stuff. And so it brought a curiosity to my mind, though. What in the world is why? Why? I mean, whiskey. Even when they drink it, they snarl up their faces like, gah. It's terrible. All of it tastes terrible. Stinks. It stinks. And I asked my father, I said, well, Dad, why in the world do you drink that stuff? I said, it doesn't even have a good taste. He said, well, son, to be honest with you, it's just to get my mind off of life. And that was the only pleasure that he had to give him any relief, which brought more trouble. And I don't care what the festivity is and how long it lasts, but it ain't going to last forever. It only lasts a portion of time. I don't care if it, whatever it may be, good or bad. If you're trying to get the strength you need, the help you need out of that little spurt of feast or festivity, then you're going to find yourself in the same position, but you're going to be even worse off. So I would simply say to you, there's a lot of feasting going on out in this old world. There's a lot of festivities and things like that. But it's not. It's a delusion. It'll keep you from the grace. I mean, if Jesus comes by and you're caught up in the festivities, you're liable to miss him. And that would be a tragedy. But then notice not only that, look in verse number 2. Pleasures can be a delusion to us. It can be a deception to us. But not only that, notice in verse 2, now there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool. I'm interested in this sheep market. It is also called a sheep gate. And it was the gate, and there were many gates leading into Jerusalem, but it was the gate in which all of the sheep that were to be slaughtered were brought in and handed over to become sacrifices. Now, this didn't just happen during Jesus' day. This goes all the way back, of course, into the Old Testament, when that tabernacle was erected and then Solomon built the temple. There were sacrifices, daily sacrifices that were made, and sacrifices for the sins of Israel, sacrifices for different purposes and all of that, all of those things. And so here would be those sheep that are right here at this Bethesda, right here at this pool. And they were bringing the sheep in and they were sacrificing them. But the sad thing is never a one of those sacrifices would help the people who are at the pool so close to where the sacrifice is. The reason being is it had long since became just a practice, or let's use the word program, a religious program connected to these same priests who could do nothing for them either. They had religion all around them, but it was a religion that had no power and had no real purpose. And the reason why it had lost its purpose is because when you went back to the tabernacle or you went back to that temple, we realized that everything about it was to be a picture of Christ himself. But yet when Christ himself stepped into the temple, they had no idea who he was. They did not even see the resemblance or the representation, nor the type. So it really had no meaning anymore at all. It was just a routine that was to lead nowhere. They were offering sacrifices that would do nothing for no one and would lead nowhere. Why? Because the real sacrifice was on the scene and they had rejected him, so therefore they lost all meaning in what they were doing. And so while they hadn't lost a beat, they hadn't lost a step in the programs and the practices of religion, they were keeping it up to par. As a matter of fact, more so when Christ got there than ever before, that Israel was so religious on so many levels. But yet the devils and the sicknesses and so on abounded where religion seemed to be so strong. We somehow think that when people become religious, and we call America, of course, a Christian nation, that that's the cure for everything, just a title or going through the practices. I realize that there are churches on every corner, especially in the South, and of every denomination. But all you have to do is look into those communities and find out that there are great needs there. They're not being met. Why? Because religion cannot meet the need. And though these sacrifices, though these routines are continued on and on, these programs are only a delusion or a deception or a hindrance to Christ. Because if you, like the Pharisees, cast all of your hope on the Jewish religion, when Christ steps on the scene, you're going to reject him. That's what they did. And so I notice here that this is a deception. These programs, these sacrifices, these routines. And of course, it's the same thing that's going on in the majority of religions in America, and even in the Baptist circle, to where people have come to the place that they are immune to anything that is, I mean, they've come to the place that they are satisfied with the everyday religious activities. I mean, let's just go sing, let's go preach, let's go do things that we always do, but they really are not looking for Christ to show up. And they really, really don't think that they're there for any real change in their own life. And so there's really no purpose in it, because they are not seeing Christ. They're not being connected to Christ. And religion almost as a whole has become one program after another. Let's just hand down something else that will do, hopefully, to continue on, lest everybody become, godless. Human efforts. And here we have them continuing on these, just as well had quit the sacrifices. They should have quit the sacrifices many years ago and ate those animals, because
They were not sacrifices that were connected to Christ. And it is proven when he steps on the scene. It becomes a delusion. The greatest, listen to me, the greatest hindrance of you and me that are here tonight in this church is more than likely not an enticement of some sin in this world, but the very religion that we practice. I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, I don't know what the future holds, but I mean, there's just a lot of things that don't bother me as far as this world is concerned. But if I was to say it to you, what is the one thing that could become and is your greatest hindrance as far as Christ is concerned? It's the very ministry that I'm a part of. Going through the routines, just going somewhere and giving somebody a little shot of a sermon. And somehow thinking that that's going to carry them through and I'll make it through myself. Instead of realizing and saying, Lord, don't let this service just be another service. Don't let us just go and be people who are going through the formalities. But Lord, may you truly change my life. And so they're so close to religion, but religion is not the answer. It is the deception to grace. I'm talking about pleasures and I'm talking about the programs. But then let's look on down in verse number 3. In these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, of blind, halt, wither, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first at the troubling of the water stepped in was made whole of whatsoever disease that he had. Now I have read after some commentators that think that this was more of a folklore, a story. But I have no reason to believe that. I believe what the scripture said. Obviously, this would take place from time to time. And while I say to you that pleasure can become a hindrance and programs can become a hindrance, the pool itself can become a hindrance. The very thing that we focus on. And from the scriptures, it seems to be authentic that at certain times an angel would stir that water and that someone would step into it, and whoever that one person was, they were made whole. But as a result of that, everybody that is there has turned their focus to the pool. And all of the attention is the pool. And they're waiting for some kind of a movement in the pool so that at least one of them can be healed by the pool. Well, I want to say to you that, you know, if you got to the pool and you was the first one to the pool, then good for you. The pool would help you. But it'd only help you. It wouldn't help nobody else on that occasion. But someone would say, well, what's wrong with that? Well, it didn't meet the whole need. God blessed the man or the woman that made it to the pool first. Because physically, evidently, they would be made whole. But you'll notice in the scripture that Jesus never performs a miracle for the physical aspect alone. It goes much further than that. Because when we go on by the text, the Bible said, Jesus findeth this man. He is now in the temple. And when Jesus finds this man, he's already made him whole. Why is he looking for him? He wants him to know that there is a deeper meaning to this. He has done more than just touch the physical. He said, now this, as I said this morning, is a sin problem. Now, go and sin no more. In other words, I have not only healed you, but I have forgiven you of your sin. You are whole, not only in the physical sense, but in the spiritual sense. Now, there are some things, and thank God for those that make attention and give attention to the body. I'm glad for doctors that can put stents in. I'm glad for medicines that will help as far as cancer. I'm glad for rehabilitation centers that will take those who have their vices and will sort of help them along. But I'm going to tell you, whatever they do by measure can only be done in a physical sense. And I have thought about those poor deluded souls who left. Whoever stepped down in that pool the rest of their lives, all they ever talked about was a pool and the physical condition. I'll tell you, I was there. I used to go down there. I was in that pool down there. And they say nothing don't happen, but bless God, I stepped in that pool. And I'm going to tell you, I was made whole. I'm in the pool. I've been into the pool. I tell you, I got something out of the pool. Well, you were made whole physically. But hey, mister, there's more than that. In this matter of being made whole, I would rather wait upon Jesus to come and know that I was made whole, not only physically, but spiritually. But there's a lot of people, of course, they'd rather have the pool than they would the person. Because you can go to the pool and you don't have to deal with the real issues. You go step down in the pool, ain't nobody gonna say nothing about whatever's going on in your life personally. You just step in the pool and you got, hey, even the angel ain't going to preach to you. He just stirring the pool. You get in the pool and you're made to feel better on the physical sense. There's an emotional lift, a temporal lift, but nothing that deals with the eternal. And the focus in this hour seems to be a focus that is upon the physical. We're all talking about, and everything's written on what to eat and what to do to live longer. Well, I think there's a physical aspect of where we should try to take care of ourselves and so on. I'm like Bill Cosby. He had that little quote. He said, "I am what I ate. I am what I ate, and I'm scared." And that's where I'm at. But, and I'm not excusing any of that, but I'm saying, I mean, it seems like everything is pointed to trying to do something that'll get us all to live longer. But there is an absence of anything, and it is offensive if you deal with anything that has to do with eternity. Yes, he can go to the pool. Glad he can go to the pool. Hope he does get healed in the pool. But I'm going to tell you something. If that's all he gets is the pool, he's still got an eternity to deal with as far as sin is concerned. And thank God when Jesus comes on the scene, he won't just leave you at the pool. He'll deal with the inner man also. He will deal with that heart. And so I noticed that the pleasures can be a disconnect, can be a hindrance, can be a deception. The programs, even the pool itself. The pool itself leaves the real issue untouched and undealt with. And brothers and sisters, that's probably where we are as a whole. Is everybody wants to be compassionate about the physical.
You're right.
But they don't want to say nothing about the spiritual. Oh, let's listen, little doggies and little kittens and all that stuff, humane society, let's take care of that. And you ought to. You're cruel if you abuse an animal. And even in the physical sense, the poverty, boy, where they just really play that up. I never have figured out what was wrong with being poor anyhow. I was poor. I didn't know it. But the great truth about that is that Jesus was poor his whole life.
Right.
Didn't bother him none. But you see, they want to grab our compassion and put it on things that and we should be compassionate about. But then on the other hand, they think we are extreme and filled with hate. Can't believe Jesus would go to that fella that 38 years sitting there. Did you hear what he told him in church? He started dealing with him about sin. He said, don't sin. No. I said, I can't believe he would do that. We're just not willing to connect the two. That the reason for much of our physical demise and our nation in the condition that it is in is because of the spiritual.
Right.
Oh, and now listen. And I think we ought to be compassionate. I think we ought to love. But there's a lot of things in this world that are caused because of sin. And if you don't deal with the sin, there's no way you can help. As far as the physical is concerned, as far as taking care of it. I think about AIDS. What a terrible, terrible, horrible disease. And many have it not because of what the sin practice is, but because of blood transfusions and things of that nature and children being born as a result. I understand that. But I'm going to tell you something. We all know that the originality of that came as a result of horrible sin. But yet the world wants our compassion. They want our money. They want our hearts on the disease. But they don't want anything said about the sin. And that goes in all levels. You know, I keep talking about cirrhosis of the liver and my family being eat up with that, and that's not being mean or cruel, but just the fact that we try to help somebody in the physical doesn't mean that there's not a time to say to them, hey, you know what the cause is, there's got to be a cure, and the cure is Christ. The only cure for this world and the diseases of this world is Christ. Is Christ. And anything short of that is delusion and it is deception. The pleasure, the program, even the pool is a hint. Oh, it'd be nice to have a little supernatural situation to make you ecstatic and emotionally lifted and so on. Hey, did you see that angel jump down in the pool? Well, yes. But it's not going to do anything for you. Nor is it going to do anything for me. But then notice with me in verse 7, and I close this thought. I'll give you an illustration or two. But notice with this thought, verse number 7, the impotent man answered him, sir, I would have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool. But while I am coming, another steppeth down before me. Another of the great delusions, of course, is people. Looking to someone else, depending on someone else to fill the void in your own life and to do that which is impossible. And that happens in relationships. That's where a lot of the strife comes from. Somehow we feel like that the person we may be possibly married is not doing for us or fulfilling in us their part. Or it's like the nation itself, entitlement. You know, come on, do something for me. You know where I'm at. You know what street I live on. You know what ailments I have. Come on, write another check. And brother, they're writing them left and right. But not to me and you. To those that can give them another vote and keep them in office and so on. Entitlements. You owe me something. Give me something. And then this man is no different than all the rest. He has been looking for somebody. Hey, buddy, come here. Come here. You going to be around long? Well, I think no, you're going to have to stay a while. It's about the time of the season when last time it moved, come back. Hey! He's gone. He doesn't have time to hang around. Who knows when the pool's going to be. And it was, he says, my family doesn't even come to see me. They're none of those. It looks like my brother would come and sit by me, and he could get me in there. He's a big old boy. Hey, my children don't even come by anymore. I have no man. That when the water is troubled, that will put me in the water. It is a great deception when we begin to look to one another to do for us what only Christ can do. And I found this to be so even in churches, that the poor souls in that church somehow think and put the load, the unnecessary load, the impossible load, upon the preacher, as if he can give them the answer to all is going on in their family. I'm not saying I'm necessarily against this. I don't know why I mention it, but I tell you, counseling. I got good news for you. You'll never need counseling if you'll just listen to what the man of God's got to say from right there. It'll take care of all that. It's right here. It's right here. And even if you do get counseled, it ought to come out of the Bible. But the truth of the matter is that I can't, as an evangelist, come here and meet the needs of all your hearts and lives if you're looking to a human who has reasoning just like you do to fill that void or to touch you or do whatever. This man realized it. Sooner or later, he realized it. It came to him. He said, I got no man. Well, I'm going to tell you something. If you've got a man, if you've got a woman, if you've got somebody that you think is going to do for you what only Christ can do for you, you are deceived. Let us not put this pressure upon each other to perform what is a divine act to perform. People cannot carry your load. We can bear one another's burdens, but I tell you, I cannot pick up your load and deliver you from what you're going through. You can't deliver me from what I'm going through, but I can point you to one who can deliver you from what you are going through. They're just, and we could go on and on, there are just so many things that this world offers as a band-aid to what we really need. This man needs something that goes to his very heart. Not only body, but soul and spirit. And only Christ can do that. Well, let me just summarize it as I did this morning. You said, well, what is this man's hope? If all of this is, if he's got deception, what is this man's hope? Look again in verse number 1. And the Bible said Jesus went up to Jerusalem. I'm going to tell you what our hope is, wherever it's at, is that Jesus shows up. Amen. That is the only hope. He must show up. But then notice down in verse number 6. When Jesus saw him lying, knew that he had been a long time in that case, he said to him, wilt thou be made whole? The only answer for you, me, or anybody in this world, is not only must Jesus show up, but he's going to have to speak up. Oh, aren't you glad for the day when you really heard what he had to say? When he really said to you and spoke to you and said, hey, do you really want to be made whole? Well, what a wonderful day that was. Went above and beyond. And I'm going to tell you, there's a lot of speaking going on, I'm sure. And as I said, there was a lot of remedies offered. There was a lot around there. There's a lot of talk. Hey, you know, they say that probably the angel, the way they figured it out, they've done some dating and stuff, that angel will probably be back on May the 1st or something like that, or whatever the date is. And by the way, and you can hear them talk. Everybody's talking about their ailments and their sicknesses. And hey, my cousin tried this, and so-and-so tried that, and why don't you try that? I mean, you're in a room. You're in a ward of all sick people. What do you think you're going to hear them talking about? Hey, what's that on your arm? Well, I'll tell you, I had this, I got this back. It about kills me. I spent all the money and I ain't got better. Like the woman with the issue of blood. And I just, you sit around and you talk about it. It's like dragging an old dead horse. All you got to talk about is the same old thing. If you don't believe that, you need to surrender and pastor a Baptist church. And ask the average church member how they're doing on Sunday morning. Now, for the most part, they're kind, but there's always one or two that's going to run you through the gamut of everything that's been wrong with them for the last 50 years. And then the talk is just, you continue to talk about it. He's heard talk after talk after talk. He's heard people speak to him. People come by and say kind words. Even some of the priests come by and say, "When praying for, we offered up a special sacrifice for you." Yeah, special sacrifice. You hadn't been doing anything on the Sabbath, have you? I mean, you ain't. Of course not. I can't even walk. What do you expect? He's heard everybody. But he ain't heard a voice like this. A voice that would walk up to him one day after 38 years and say, "Wilt thou be made whole?" This is not an average voice. He speaks with authority. When he said that, it had authority. It wasn't like a sales pitch. "I got a handkerchief back here. You want to be made whole? You got 1,000? Huh? I'll put some sweat on that and it's guaranteed." Huh? No. He's not a TBN television evangelist. He's not a health and wealth type fella. He speaks with authority. He means what he says. "Wilt thou be made whole?" He doesn't even have to have an answer because he's already made up his mind what he's going to do.
Right.
It's almost like he's saying, "You're fixing to get made whole." Can you remember that hour when Christ seemed to speak to your heart, warm your heart, tell your heart what you'd never heard before? "Will you be made whole? Will you be forgiven? Will you be saved? Will you be?" Wow, what a voice. And I tell you, I still love to hear that voice in my times of trouble. When I've heard everything that everybody else has got to say about it and sort of just turn it off and ain't listening to nothing, I'm numb to it, and then all of a sudden, "Will you be made whole?" You see, Jesus has to show up. Jesus has to speak up. And then I notice Jesus saith unto him, we'll deal with him more later, "Rise, take up thy bed and walk." Jesus must raise you up. He has to speak up, raise you up. And then in verse number 14, he's got to straighten you up. "Go and sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto you." Let me just close it out this way and say, I'm going to tell you something. John chapter number 5 is not about the place, Bethesda. It's not about the party, the feast. It's not about the pool, the partial remedy. It's not about the people and what they might be able to do for you. It's not about the program. Oh, got a new program. They say it is wonderful. But it's about the one answer for all of our lives. That is the person of Christ. Anything less than Christ is a deception. Is a delusion. It is a hindrance. It is a veil. It will keep you from I don't know about you,
but I'd just like to have him show up. I'd just like to have him speak up. I'd just like to have him raise it up and straighten it up. Let's stand and bow our heads.